My name is Javon. I live here in Ann Arbor. Grew up here. I work remotely for a company called Basecamp. Is this cutting in and out, or is it okay? It's good? Yeah. It's cutting out in my ear. Work remotely for Basecamp, who are headquartered in Chicago. We all work remotely. There's about 50 employees. And I don't know if it was like a couple years ago, I presented actually in this room about the JavaScript that makes Basecamp tick. I think that was the title. And that was Basecamp 2. Last year we launched Basecamp 3, and which is what led me to work on an Electron app. I'm not gonna talk a whole lot about that app, but this is more just a intro to Electron. Has anyone worked with Electron before? Cool. So Electron's history starts at GitHub. They created an open source text editor called Atom, and they built it on top of web tech. So it was basically layered on top of Chrome and Node. I think this plays, yeah. So it's a text editor that uses basically the DOM to operate. So the whole UI is HTML. And you can see you have the Chrome Web Inspector, you know, built right in, which is something you have built into any Electron app. So as Atom progressed, they eventually sort of extracted Electron, which was first known as Atom Shell, and later sort of matured into Electron. Electron hit version 1.0 a few months ago. It's being actively developed, but I'd consider it very stable. They're already at 1.3 now. They don't seem to make drastic changes, but it moves along pretty nicely. And there are a lot of Electron apps out there. You may notice them or you may not. This is a small snippet from their website. I've sort of noticed that there's sort of two categories of Electron apps, one being sort of like your traditional desktop app, something like a text editor, a video player, something that just kind of works with your operating system. And then the other half of the category is apps that more or less like wrap a web service. So apps for services like Slack or Basecamp, apps that sort of layer on top of a website and add native functionality to your computer. And I have no idea what the balance is between these two things, but it seems to be like kind of a fair balance. So last year we launched a new version of Basecamp, Basecamp 3, and it was the first version we launched simultaneously on a bunch of platforms. So when it launched, you know, we had desktop and mobile web, and then also iOS and Android apps. And we wanted to do desktop as well. And so we followed that up a few months later with a Mac and Windows app built with Electron. And so I had just been curious about Electron. I've heard things about it, and I started playing with it one afternoon and basically built like what ends up being the final version of the Basecamp app, which isn't... I mean, I didn't finish. It took 6 weeks to finish, but the first day almost had like everything working. And I think even 6 weeks is a short amount of time for a project like this. I was the only developer that worked on it. There's a little bit of designer help. It didn't need a lot of design. And it more or less wraps the Basecamp website. And I'm just going to demo it real quick. But like this is the reason I wanted a desktop app, is like command tab. I'm like very disorganized with my browser tabs. You know, I'll end up with like 1,000 open, and then I just file for bankruptcy and like close the whole thing and start over. And so anything that I want to have open all day doesn't stay open all day. And there's just this is like real power. I mean, from a business perspective, this is great. Like, I'm not really in charge of improving business for Basecamp, but having your brand sort of in the dock on the desktop is, it's powerful, it's sticky, you know, it's right there in front of people. And But really, like, this is the reason I wanted an app. I wanted to launch it easily, and I wanted to switch to it easily. So I'm just going to demo it real quick so you can see what it looks like. Hopefully I'm on the Wi-Fi. This is what it looks like when you have no internet connection. There it goes, or a slow one. So this is fundamentally what the website looks like. We inject a little bit of CSS to like scoot this guy over. And beyond that, it just wraps it in a thin frame and is its own native window. You'll see that the dock icon gets, this matches the badges from the app. I don't know if you can all see that well, but that's a really nice feature. When you have unread items in Basecamp, they show up in your dock, so it's a nice reminder that you have something new in Basecamp. So you can, Electron gives you APIs to easily control things like this. I'll get into all that later. I just wanted to kind of show you what it looks like. There's a history menu, which is something that I suppose you would have in a browser, but it would kind of be mixed up with your other visits. So this is just my Basecamp traffic. And so you can navigate to previous pages. And it remembers your last place and the window size. That's almost like every feature of the Basecamp app. So that's Basecamp. I'm going to close it now. And I'm not going to talk a whole lot more about it, although feel free to ask questions. Also, feel free to ask questions like at any point during this talk. It's not super long. Switching back here. So we launched the app last February, late February, and immediately saw like a really great uptick in use. I guess it's an uptick because you're going from zero. But right now we have about 10,000 daily users of the app. They seem to be about 70% on Mac, 30 Windows. I'm not really sure how that compares to just people in general. And this one, although this is kind of a funny graph, is kind of the most interesting to me. This is the Basecamp 3's desktop app share of desktop traffic, so compared to people visiting in a browser, more or less, so that excludes our mobile traffic. And right now, about 10% of Basecamp 3's traffic comes from this app that we built pretty quickly, haven't updated very much, and now 10% of our users are using it, hopefully happily. So it's this really easy way to sort of get your thing out of the browser box and into people's computers. There you go. So I'm just going to give like a quick tour of how Chrome works, or most browsers probably work, and this will lead into what Electron is and how it kind of relates to Chrome and the browser. So when you launch Chrome, you're starting this app. You're booting its main process. It's written in C++. Chrome, the browser itself, is not open source, but Chromium, sort of the engine, the thing behind Chrome, is all open source. So you can go read the C++ and change it or add to it if you want. Opening a tab spawns a new process referred to as a renderer process. This is where the DOM lives, your JavaScript, HTML. This is where many of you and I spend most of our time working, building these things for these renderer processes. So every tab is a new process. I don't remember if Chrome was the browser that first sort of introduced this process model, but you open a tab, you spawn a new process. If the web page crashes or something crashes, you kill the tab, not the whole browser. You've probably seen that on frowny Chrome guy, if that ever happens. And these processes communicate back and forth with the main process over an IPC channel, basically just a message channel. So they're kind of loosely coupled, and they can send messages back and forth. So Electron keeps this exact same model, but basically injects Node into it, at least from your perspective. So you still have a main process, and instead of writing C++, you write Node, and you interact with the main process through Node itself or a set of APIs that Electron provides. And then you also have Node injected to all of your renderer processes. So where you would normally run JavaScript, and you still can run JavaScript, you also have Node snuck in. So you can do anything you can do in Node in either process. You can, you know, in that example of Atom where we popped open the console, you can run Node commands from the JavaScript console. It feels strange, like, at first, but it's obviously a good fit because JavaScript is already there. So the question is, how do they communicate? It's the same model as this. So there's IPC, Node. I'm not sure if they're using the same IPC channel that Chromium provides, but they have an API for IPC. It basically looks like event dispatching and handling in JavaScript. And so if you need to talk between the processes, you can send messages back and forth. And Electron really is just a set of APIs. It's actually not that many. Like, this list goes to N, and wherever the rest of the alphabet gets to, it'd be just down by the floor somewhere. It's not a framework necessarily. It's not an IDE. It's not Xcode. It's really just this set of APIs you use to build applications. So it's really easy to jump in and start interacting with it. And it reminds me a lot of building for the web, right? So browsers and the DOM provide us a set of APIs. They don't really tell us what else to do. You run your JavaScript and your HTML and CSS. You format it however you want. You structure your directories however you want. You make the biggest mess that you want, or you use whatever framework you want. And in that regard, I feel like it's incredibly easy to get started. So I don't know if you've ever, like, I don't work on native apps very often, occasionally iOS, but if you launch Xcode for the first time, you don't know what to do, right? Like, this is, if you've built a website, if you can build a website, you can build an Electron app. And we're going to do that. We're going to build one from scratch right now, and then I'm going to go over one that I built over the weekend. So if you work with Node, you've probably done an NPM install before, and this is usually your first step to build an Electron app. You install Electron pre-built, which is basically a thin shell that downloads the correct Electron binary for your platform. So when Electron cuts new releases, they build binaries for all the platforms it supports. Mac, Windows, Linux, like Windows 32, 64-bit. You can build Electron, you can compile it yourself, but that brings you back into that kind of slower C++ compile time feedback loop using this pre-built app, and I'll show you what this is later in a little bit more detail. You can basically use a pre-compiled Electron app, and it just copies in your code and runs it every time you launch it. So this is great for development. You can quit and restart the app with your code to reload almost as fast as refreshing your browser. So I'm going to foolishly try to do this live here. Oops. Is this font size big, too small? I'll just start. I'm gonna make a new directory. Make a new directory. I'm gonna do an npm init. Just go with all the defaults here. And this could take a really long time, or not. Everyone stop using the Wi-Fi, please. I've got a backup if this is too slow. Not too bad. So this is my empty app. And I'm just gonna add a npm script to start Electron. And that is really just running Electron current directory. Electron, when you start it, by default, will launch your main script in your package file. So let's make that. And this is your main process. So when you boot Electron, your Electron app launches, you're starting in the main process. Your main process spawns renderer processes. That's usually the form of a browser window. So where Chrome would already have its frame and you're launching tabs, Electron, you're launching a process which is then going to launch Windows, because Electron doesn't have tabs. I mean, you could implement tabs, but so step one, pull in a few of the modules from the Electron API. So that's just require Electron. And app is kind of this main constant for, well, you should read the docs, but there aren't many. App is sort of your main entry point into the Electron world. And so they give you a ready callback when sort of everything's ready for you to start interacting with it. And we're going to create a new window. We're going to tell that window to load a URL. This could be a URL on the web. This could be a local file. In my case, I'm going to open a file. That's just going to be index.html, which I have not created yet. And now I'm going to make that. And that's our app, I think. So back on the command line, run npm start. So Electron booted, our code ran, we launched a window. This window is the default, I think it's 800 by 600, and it rendered our local HTML file. So, I mean, except that this looks like this unstyled HTML page. It's a native window. You have the native window controls that are correct on Windows and Linux. You have native windows that you can control. You have a dock icon that you can control. And you can use Node to do anything you want with the file system, make network requests, etc. So we'll just add on to this a tiny bit. And we'll tell the main window to open dev tools when it launches. And so there's the web inspector that you know and love. And there's our H1. So this is a really powerful debugging tool, the same way it is when you're building a web application. And it's available in every Electron app. You can control the console. You can even add new content windows to the console. So I'm not planning on building this into anything that does very much, but let's just add script. And this is where things get interesting. I'm gonna add a click handler. And then I'm gonna run require right in our HTML file. Actually, I wanna get the event here. And this is right. So I'm adding a click handler to the document. And on click, we're requiring a node module, Electron, kind of reaching through it. And we're going to set the badge to this clicked text, the doc badge, plus the coordinates of where we clicked. And I did that wrong. So I was missing a parenthesis somewhere, but kind of nicely that showed up in the console. Oh, right here. So there we go. Well, that's my max doc size, I guess. But every time I click, I'm updating the page coordinates plus the word click. It doesn't quite fit in the. But this is really fun. You're getting out of the box. You know, you're reaching out of the browser into the computer. And it's super easy. Like, these APIs are great. They work cross-platform. I think I actually just used a Mac-only one because there's no dock on Windows. But it's fun, and it's super easy. We made that in 2 minutes. Any questions before I leave our app behind? Yeah, these. So the question is, can you jack other things into the menus? Yes. Electron has an API for controlling these windows. You basically pass it a big object. It's like an array of titles and labels and key commands and event handlers. So, you know, you can set, you'd have like a top level array of these guys, which each have a sub array of sub menus, and they optionally can set the key command. And basically, you just, every time you throw that object at Electron's API for updating the the menus, you'll recreate these menus. And they have click handlers, so you can set a callback for any click on a menu item. They also optionally allow you to do native things like cut, copy, paste. You don't have to implement that yourself. You can pass like basically a symbol that says do the native cut, copy, paste. So the app I was launching by Electron by default, I think, provides you with this set of window menus, but you can wipe those all and write your own. So you get these, you know, you get the native controls by default, things like that. Yeah, hey. So, like, yes and no. anything you can do from Node, you can do from Electron. You could write, if you want to, say, compile something at like the C level, you can do that with Node by you can create Node modules that are compiled at install. The APIs that Electron provides are written for natively for each operating system, and the Node interface to that basically works across platforms. So they've taken care of the cross-platform handling of, say, creating menus. If you want to do something directly, you'd have to implement that yourself at however you would do it with Node. Yeah. Okay. So I spent not quite even, I don't know, half day building this little app. This is something that I've been kind of wanting to make for myself anyway. It's by no means done, whatever, but it's open source on GitHub right now if you want to look at the code. I'm gonna go through the code right now, step by step, and walk through some of Electron's APIs, show you how I kind of organized this app that, granted, I spent an afternoon on, and we'll go from there. So I'm going to quit Keynote again. One second. So this app is called Desper, short for desktop wallpaper. And it's an app that lets you browse images from the web and save them as your desktop image, your computer's desktop image. And let's just start it up so I can show you what it looks like. On the left, we have a list of collections of images. Clicking one loads them. When you hover, you can mark one as a favorite or set it as your desktop image. And that's basically it. In the background, it's pulling data from the New York Public Library's Digital Collections API, which is this really cool archive of stuff that they like scanned and archived correctly. And there's a ton of stuff up there. I handpicked these collections because I thought they were, well, even the dimensions were sort of right for desktop images. But it's really fun to browse. I'm not actually making live API connections right now. I basically saved a big JSON blob, and this app loads from it. But the images load from them. Let's hide others. So I can mark one as a favorite, shows up in my favorites, or set it as my desktop image and becomes a desktop image. So again, like this is a thing you couldn't do before from a website. You can't reach into someone's computer. It'd be fun, I guess, if you could. But these are the kinds of things that get me excited about Electron, is sort of just this breaking out of this really constrained box that we've kind of all worked in for a long time, but also this box that is super familiar. Like, I've been working with the web for a really long time. So I love HTML and CSS, JavaScript, but it's really fun to like take this little detour and use the computer. So one little thing, I had these turned off. When you set an image, you also get this nice native toast notification. Electron actually uses the DOM or the browser's notification API. They hijack it. So when you launch a notification, rather than sort of Chrome's rather ugly notification box that's not native for some reason. They reach out into each operating system and create a native notification. So that, if you had, like, for example, with Basecamp, we were already using that API, wrapping it in an Electron wrapper, we just get these nicer notifications now, which is great. Any questions about this so far? Probably not. I'm just going to jump into the code. So this is it. Basically the same structure that we had before. Package.json is our entry point here. This one points to main index in a main directory and has a couple other dependencies, but not many. And so I tend to organize, I know these are small on the left side here, but I tend to organize my Electron apps sort of divided by main and renderer because they're running in different places. So your main process is the one that boots. Typically your main process doesn't do all that much except control windows. And then your renderer processes are the ones in the browser. They also have access to all the browser APIs. So the same code won't necessarily run in both places. If you're using DOM APIs, that's not going to work in your main process because there's no DOM there, et cetera. And then Electron's APIs clearly state this, but not all of them work in either process. So some are designed just for the main process. I don't know if any are just the renderer process. They provide a bridge, actually, to reach from renderer into their main API. But again, they don't enforce how you structure your code. So for my own sanity, I tend to sort of keep them separated. So running start launches this main index.js. This is not too dissimilar from the tiny app we made. Few more things added. We're setting window size in the title bar. Basically holding on to an instance of this browser window that we can release and close. So you can close the app without quitting it and relaunch it by clicking the icon again. And that we controlled here. So app on activate, if there is no window anymore, create a new window. So this is basically the entirety of the main process. There's one other file that handles setting the wallpaper, and I'm going to come back to that later. So this just loads an index.html file in my browser directory. I'll jump there. Again, familiar HTML, comfortable land. We're loading some styles. Got a script that just requires one index, which kind of loads the tree of things. And I'm using custom elements here. So this is one awesome thing about working with one browser only, Chrome. There's no cross-browser worries, right? So you can use every technology that Chrome offers. It natively supports custom elements. It natively supports CSS variables. Natively supports some parts of ES6 that a lot of browsers don't support. And you're locked to that version with your Electron app. So it's kind of like a dream. It's kind of like if you wished you could put all of your customers onto one browser, you can with this. Usually as new Chrome releases come out, the Electron team is quick to package that up and ship a new release. So you can pretty much keep up with what Chrome's up to, which is great. So I'm requiring an index. Wrong browser index. This browser index loads all of my custom element definitions and handles one IPC communication channel for setting the wallpaper image, which I'll come back to. So these are the custom element definitions. Who's worked with custom elements or web components? Anybody? I'm totally smitten with them. We use them in Basecamp pretty heavily. They're easily polyfilled. Google, the Polymer project, has a polyfill for it. they can be used in isolation. You don't need like the whole Polymer project. And here's what I love about them. A element that you define has a series of life cycle events. There's three. There's an attached callback, there's a created callback, attached callback, and removed callback, I think. So anytime your element is either created with JavaScript or inserted into the DOM, you can do something when that happens. So rather than a DOM content loaded handler that maybe looks for an element and attaches an event handler, you can create these self-contained components that know when they've appeared and disappeared and do something. So that's what I chose to do here. And just going back real quick, I've got in the HTML file, we've got a wallpaper source element and a wallpaper favorites element. And those are, this is my favorites, and this is actually one source which renders a bunch of collection elements. I won't spend a ton of time sort of diving into each element. It's worth a browse on GitHub. But this is the API that, I can move that up. I don't know if it's hard to see. Document register element. This is how you register your element with the browser. This is supported natively by Chrome. Other browsers are catching up. I forget who, maybe, Edge supports them. So basically you just tell it your tag name and you provide it the definitions, which is a constructor function. And then you can just put them in your DOM. Custom elements always have a hyphen in them. They're always sort of namespaced. Doesn't really matter what it is, but it separates them from, so this is wallpaper-source. That's just the requirement of custom elements. So I've got a few of those here. They basically are in charge of loading their own data and rendering themselves. And those are the elements. I'll show one, which is wallpaper item. Wallpaper item is, you know what? Let me open the inspector. So the font size is small. Oops. Too big. So here's my collection of custom collection elements. And then these guys over here are a wallpaper item right here. And what's neat is you can treat these like classes. And you can hang objects off them. You can create methods on them. So if I look at this method, or this element, this is just a DOM element, I can reach into it and access a property I set. So that's the item which contains the metadata about the, it just has the image URL and stuff. So it's this really nice way to custom elements. I'm not going to talk about them. It could be a great way to sort of create self-contained components of behavior that don't that are isolated from the rest of your app. Back to the code. So wallpaper item, that was the one we were just inspecting, has a click handler. When you click it, it does one of two things, either toggle favorite or set wallpaper based on a selector in its content. and it executes that method right on the item that's defined on it. So item is a model I created, has these methods. Toggle favorite adds it to a set of favorites. And set wallpaper is where we're seeing that IPC communication. So IPC renderer is an Electron API. And calling set wallpaper on an item sends the set wallpaper message with this payload, basically just the image URL and the title. Back in our main process, this is wallpaper.js in the main process. There's an event handler for that. So on set wallpaper, this is just a class that I wrote to handle downloading. So what happens is we send it a URL, it downloads that file locally into your file system, and then uses a node module called wallpaper, conveniently enough, which you pass a local file to set your computer's wallpaper. So uses that URL, downloads it. The download all happens using Electron APIs. So this is where you can do really neat things, like really reach into the internals of the browser. I'm adding an event handler for when a download will happen, so the will download event that Electron provides. And then I'm telling the web contents, which is basically the rendered contents, just a different set of APIs, to download that URL. If I wasn't handling that event, you'd see the normal save dialog that you see in your browser. You can handle it, basically hijack it, do whatever you want with it. And that's true of almost everything that your browser does. You can, kind of like you can with Chrome extensions, sort of mutate the behavior of the browser natively. There's a lot of ways you can do that. It kind of depends on your needs. Usually, whatever your needs are, you'll find a way in the API to do it. You can intercept every web request and alter the headers, incoming or outgoing, things like that. Yeah.
Does that also happen in like XML HTTP request level? Can you actually intercept those as well?
Yeah, the question is, like, can you do that at a XHR level? Yes, you can intercept any request. You can proxy every request through a proxy. You could delete headers. You know, it's, you can load an iframe cross-origin by deleting the header that prevents you from doing that from the third-party host. You have a lot of power there. Yeah. Yeah.
So a lot of like with Chrome, you have a lot of like developer flags and stuff like that. Can you set those?
Mm-hmm.
Like allow for like web sockets and stuff like that?
Yep.
Is it default?
By default, you're kind of just launching whatever Chrome would have launched as. There's a API. Electron has an API. App command append switch, and this would let you set any of the developer flags that Chrome offers. I think it's one of these two.
This would be in your main.
Right. You could either. You could pass them command line, or in your main app process, just use this API app command append switch. So the main there's one main process, so that's global. If you're rendering local HTML files, it would be the same. That would be global. There's Electron implements a web view tag, which is kind of like an iframe on steroids. So it's for embedding other sites in your local HTML files. Those you need to reconfigure because those in turn spawn another process. That's how the Basecamp app works, actually, is a web frame, single web frame, web view tag. That's what it is. Yeah?
I wouldn't expect it, but did you have to modify your HTML CSS somehow to make it work?
Yeah, barely. Electron has an API for the web view tag to inject CSS or execute JavaScript on a remote site, so when it loads, you can insert your own code. We actually just add when we load Basecamp, we add a class name to the HTML element, and we keep the styles in Basecamp itself. but you could just as well inject CSS, a blob of CSS. So the only thing we do in Basecamp is move this logo right here because it was underneath the buttons. So that those are the only styles we add. We inject JavaScript eventless. We inject JavaScript to listen for events that Basecamp dispatches, which is how we get the changes to like your number of unreads. So we basically just add an event listener, our own event listener, from the Electron app into Basecamp, and it. So Basecamp fires an event when this, when these change, when these numbers change. We add a listener for that, and then we change the doc icon. Long story short, we download the URL, and then this is, so remember, this is our IPC communication. We're in the main process. Set the wallpaper, and then this is just a convenience thing. The event from that we were that we handled has a sender object for basically sending a message right back. So event sender send wallpaper set. So we receive the message, we set the wallpaper, we send it back to the renderer process, and the renderer handles that right here. So IPC renderer on wallpaper set, and this is where we create that new native notification, DOM notification that we saw earlier when I set a, that guy. Happens right here when we get the message back. That's it. That's the whole app right now. But I thought it was a good example of going sort of just like using all this web tech that we know, but reaching out a little bit. Yeah. Yep, I'll, that's my next slide. Good, yeah, yeah. What's that? Oh yeah, so I'm using a node module called Wallpaper. Wallpaper itself has ships with basically command line tools for setting wallpaper on all three platforms. When I send that IPC message to the main process, so this is wallpaper, wallpaper set, wallpaper path, which is just the URL of the file that we just downloaded. So it handles that for us conveniently. That's not an Electron thing. And then just sends the message back. Question in the back? Can you speak up a little bit? Sorry. Yeah, can you use Angular or React? You can use anything that runs in Chrome. So you'll see a lot of Electron apps built with React, Angular, et cetera. I don't know if you guys have ever checked out, there's a browser called Brave. It's built on Electron with React. It's fun. I was actually picking through it when I was working on the Basecamp app because it's almost the same thing. Like Basecamp opens a web view, which loads Basecamp. Brave opens a web view to any URL you type in. But they've actually, so they're doing all that stuff like I was talking about, like filtering traffic, and that's how they've baked ad blocking into Brave itself. They've actually forked React or forked Electron and like done a lot to it, but. But it's a good example to look at as a React app. Pretty standard React components in there. Yeah, so it's the question is bundling a database. It's you're at the mercy of installing on any system. So if you can bundle, say, SQLite in a node module or in your app itself, that's an option. You can also use what the browser provides, like local storage. IndexedDB is a DOM, it's part of built into the browser. You're free to spawn any process you like once your app starts. So it's kind of up to you to bundle. If you want to try to bundle a database application in there, you can. But you can't rely on your customer's application to say, have MySQL up and running, something like that. This app, your favorites, I just write a file to the to disk, a JSON file. So your favorites are stored locally. You have a question, Brian? So if that website you visited tried to use so typically the way it works, I mean, I think the answer is yes. Like, if you visited a website that tried to require Electron in its JavaScript, or, you know, feature detected it somehow, and your Electron app had Node integration turned on for that browser window, which, by the way, is something you can control, then yes, I think they could. I don't know of any reports of that, like somebody doing that in the wild. Basecamp's app creates a web view tag, which is a web view that has Node integration turned off, which still allows you to inject a Java. It has a preload option. So you inject a preload script. That preload script can run Node, has access to Node and Electron, but it's divorced from the app's JavaScript runtime environment. So if I tried to, on the Basecamp side, require Electron or require file system, delete all, you know, that would not be available. I suppose it is something you could be careful of. But typically, you can create the right sandbox between the two. I mean, you can do it. It's just up to you to do it. Yeah. Is there one more question? OK. Cool. Almost done. So this is my entire slide for how to package and bundle and ship your app. There are a bunch of ways to do it, and there's a lot of tools that the Electron community provides. There's Grunt plugins. But the basic process is, when you ran that Electron pre-built, you basically have like your app.app in there, like it's a Mac app right in there, and it's copying files inside of it. So the bundling process is doing that like more efficiently and like zipping it up and code signing it. That's actually like what took me the longest of building Basecamp's app, was learning how to code sign both the Mac and Windows apps. Basically, we already had a certificate from Apple. We didn't have one for Windows. You buy this expensive certificate and never think about it again. But you're signing your application with your name. It's kind of like having an SSL certificate. And when people download it, it becomes trusted on the computer, rather than throwing an error saying, like, we don't know who this developer is, or maybe not launching at all. So if you want to launch a production app, you need to sign it using a Mac, if you want it on Mac, a certificate from Apple. And basically, the tools for packaging have like a flag for providing your certificate ID, and they handle all of that for you. The end result is typically a zip file. And you would just make that file available to your customers. Electron has APIs for handling automatic updates. So you point it at a URL of your own choosing, and it basically needs to respond with yes or no, is there an update? So typically the URL you'll pass it will be the app's version that it's providing. Your server, if there's an update available, responds with the link to a zip file. And Electron handles the rest. It handles downloading the app in the background. And just basically dispatches a set of events that you can control, choose to react to. So, you know, there's one for while it's downloading, one download complete, and then there's an API for basically install and restart.
Zip file would be Electron plus your application core?
So like a...
You mean for the updates, you would get the whole bundle every time?
So on Mac, yes. On Windows, they use a different... Electron smooths this out, but Electron uses Nougat, something. Basically, they ship diffs of the app. But on the Mac app, it's the full. So the Basecamp app zipped is like 39 megabytes. You know, it's like if you built it in Xcode, it'd be like 1 megabyte. But then if you brought in a web view, it'd probably be a lot bigger, et cetera. But you're bringing a little bit of baggage with Electron. For sure. It's smaller than Chrome because it strips out a lot of the things that Chrome has in it. So the Mac app is, for Basecamp anyway, it would be a zip file. You open it up and there's a .app file in it. That app file has all the contents of the Electron node, everything, it's all tucked away in there. Yeah. Yeah, so are there cross-platform issues? Theoretically, no.
That wasn't the question.
Yeah. we shipped with only a 64-bit version of the Windows app, and so we run into occasionally customers on 32-bit Windows where it won't launch. And the only reason we did that because we were like, does anyone use 32-bit? Let's find out, and we'll just start with 64. I haven't had any issues on different Mac versions, like older OS versions. We never made a Linux app because it's such a small share for us. From what I gather, it's really the code signing and the distributing part that's the hardest part cross-platform. But if you were just doing what I was doing, command line, npm start, they just launch and work fine. Things look a little different on Windows, obviously, so you might want to tailor your styles to feel more Windows native or Mac native. But just like Chrome launches on most platforms, most of your apps in that window. So, you know, you're at the mercy of like its font rendering on Windows, things like that. But for the most part, we haven't had any, it's broken on this platform, except for the 32-bit issue we have. Yeah?
So what's environment like? You know, in Electron, you're going to be sending IPC messages when they're under the main process. In a regular browser context, you're not going to be doing it. So how do you structure that in a large application like Basecamp? Do you have a bunch of conditionals everywhere for the environment? Or how's that work?
Basecamp's JavaScript is totally separate, the stuff you would load in the browser. Are you talking about how we organize the Electron app's JavaScript?
Yeah, that and how it relates to their actual Basecamp JavaScript.
Yeah, it basically doesn't relate to Basecamp's JavaScript, except that we inject one preload script from Electron into Basecamp that uses totally standard event, just adds some event listeners. For events that Basecamp was already dispatching internally. I was on almost the last slide anyway. If you're using a front-end framework of your choosing, React, Ember, et cetera, they kind of provide you with an organizational structure. I think it's up to you to kind of feel it out. Most of your application code is renderer code typically, and Basecamp's is organized basically like a model view controller that we just created ourselves. So we basically have a models, controllers, views folders, and we wrote our own classes for each. The code is not significant. I mean, there's not much. Bigger apps tend to use frameworks like something like React. It's the same as building a website. You can put files wherever you want. Yeah. You know, I'm not a huge fan of just kind of like event systems in JavaScript generally. I feel like they're like too loosely coupled for my taste. You're just sort of like, here's an event, anybody want it? And that's really your only option for the IPC communication. So you maybe have a naming convention for your events that lines them up on each side, but it's all up to you. And it took me a little while to kind of feel it out, but we don't use a framework because we have so little code. And rendering is all Basecamp. We're not rendering any UI. Yeah. I didn't really have any more, but we can keep, if you have more questions, I'm happy to keep talking. Yeah. You had your hand up first, yeah.
This question of Node WebKit, is it still a topic or is it completely absorbed by Electron?
Is that NWJS? Node WebKit, it's a similar platform to Electron. I've never used it. I kind of looked briefly at it, but I just went with Electron when I started working with it. I think I heard GitHub hired their lead developer to work on Electron. So if that's true, then I would imagine progress is happening faster on the Electron side. Functionally, I understand they have a lot of similarities and some differences with their process model. If I were going to start today, I'd use Electron again. I don't know. I don't know like what its future is. Yeah. Just a couple of years. Go ahead. So anything that Chrome knows how to do, like MPEGs, you can video tags will work. Flash, the Electron, actually, I've never looked at this. I'm not very familiar with Flash. There's a Pepper plugin that's built, I think it's built into Electron, or you can pull it in. Or is that part of Chrome? Okay, so if you need to visit sites with Flash, I think that just works, yeah. You have to flip it on.
Okay, so it
yeah.
doesn't come
I think you have to flip it on, yeah. Yeah.
So the answer might be look at the API docs, but like we saw notifications, we saw menus.
Yeah.
I forget what else we saw, but like what are the other areas where you can interact with the data environment?
Yeah, so the question is like.
You can say look at
no,
the menu, but it's a one page.
I don't know if it is one page. So what are the other things you can do with the desktop from Electron. Let me just pop out of here. So you can set the dock icon. You can set the menu bar icon up here. Oh, sorry. I'm staring at you and looking at something else. Let me launch Basecamp. So obviously, you control this dock icon and the badges that we saw earlier. And this is going to work, well, actually, the badge text doesn't work on Windows. This menu bar icon, it's a little cut off, but you all know what menu bar icons are. This is a cross-platform API, so on the Windows, it goes down into the tray. You can handle things, like the Basecamp app doesn't do much with it, but you can handle click. You can pop a menu out there in a web view. And so on Windows, that would pop up from the tray. There are a lot of Electron, or there's some Electron apps that actually exist, entirely here. So it's a menu bar icon with just a little web view that pops out. And there's a GitHub project for kind of scaffolding one out. So menus, you can register global key commands. So that's different from things like Command R to reload. You can register system-wide keyboard shortcuts while the app's running. You can also register the app as a protocol handler, so you could define a custom Basecamp /protocol that when which is registered with your OS, and say if you can provide a link to that from anywhere, clicking it will launch the app. And then anything you would want to do with the file system, because you have Node, you can interact with it in that way. There's probably more. The docs are a great place to start. Obviously, you can bounce the doc icon. Yeah, stuff like that. So these are well written, well organized. I think I claimed there weren't that many APIs, and that's the whole list. So that's the whole list of categories. It's very digestible, and